Hello and welcome to Volume 45, Number 47 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 21st of November 2025. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Margaret Two and Julie. And in the news, the new Lidl has its opening date confirmed. A Regent Road restaurateur charged with terror offences. And again, no approval for Martham's old exchange for housing. Details on these and many other local stories in just a while, plus Grapevine Extra, in which Margaret is on the long-gone herring industry and Julie bemoans children's gift expectations. But first, we have two birthdays to celebrate. Yes, it's very best wishes for a great day on Sunday to Paul Farrell, followed on Monday by Walter Cartwright. All the very best to both of you. Without further ado, let's welcome this week's newsreaders, Margaret and Julie.
Good morning, everyone. Indeed, good afternoon. I'm not sure when you're reading this or listening to this, but whenever you do. I haven't been with you for a few weeks now, but it's Julie here and I'm back reading the news with you. So the first one is inquest opened into historian Colin Took. An investigation has been opened into the death of prolific Norfolk historian and author Colin Took. Colin, of Escort Road, Great Yarmouth, wrote more than 30 books on the town, as well as Caister and Galston. He spent 50 years of his life giving hundreds of talks and amassing a unique collection of thousands of photographs of Yarmouth and its surrounding villages. He also worked for 35 years as a telephone engineer for Post Office Communications, now known as BT, in Lowestoft and Norwich. Norfolk Coroner's Court recently opened an inquest into the death of the 85-year-old, who died at home on October the 23rd. The brief hearing confirmed Mr. Took's provisional cause of death as malignant mesothelioma, often caused by exposure to asbestos. Senior Coroner Samantha Goward also confirmed Mr. Took was born July 26, 1940, in Southgate, Middlesex. Further evidence is expected to be heard when the full inquest is held on Thursday, November the 20th. A statement written by Mr. Took before he died and a report from HMRC, which routinely contributes to inquests involving mesothelioma, to give an account of people's employment history. It's all very sad.
The opening date for a new budget supermarket in Norfolk has been revealed. German supermarket chain Lidl has confirmed its new branch in Thamesfield Way, Great Yarmouth, will open on November the 27th. The opening will begin with a ribbon-cutting ceremony featuring the mayor, Carl Annison, at 8 a.m, with free food samples and prizes up for grabs afterwards. The new store is replacing the town's current branch in Pasteur Road, which will close for good on November the 26th. A spokesman for Lidl said, "For almost two decades, we've been creating Lidl fans across Great Yarmouth and are delighted to unwrap our new store in time for Christmas. Thank you to everyone who's played a part in helping to make the store ready." The construction on the new store began in March this year and was originally earmarked to open in 2026, meaning that it will be launched ahead of schedule.
A man accused of arson after a major blaze at a Norfolk manor house will stand trial in 2 years' time after denying the charges. Aaron Eckers has been charged with 4 counts of arson following the fire in the grounds of Winterton Hall in Winterton on January the 17th this year. 2 of the charges relate to 2 vehicles which caught fire, 1 relates to an outbuilding and 1 to a conservatory. The 20-year-old of no fixed abode, but formerly of Rotherstone Lane in Scratby near Great Yarmouth, pleaded not guilty to all 4 counts at Norwich Crown Court on Wednesday. Martin Ivory, prosecuting, said it was likely the defendant would face just 1 count of arson by the time of the trial, which was fixed for November 29, 2027. He said that was due to there being 1 arson and not 4 with damage, including to 2 cars being the result of the original arson. John Morgans appeared for Eckers, who was granted bail until the trial. Firefighters were called to the listed building on Spindriff Close at around 6:30 a.m. on that morning, following reports of a massive explosion following a series of smaller ones. Fire crews later said the sounds had been gas cylinders exploding. A burger van was destroyed by the fire, which saw 4 neighbouring homes being evacuated.
A bid to build more than 500 houses on the Norfolk coast has prompted concerns that the development could swamp local communities. Norfolk County Council, through its company Repton Property Developments, together with partner Lovell Homes, has submitted major plans for land south of Lynx Road in Galston. A hybrid planning application lodged with Great Yarmouth Borough Council is seeking full permission for 442 houses and outline approval for a further 70 homes as part of an extra care facility. The plans also include a building intended for either shops or community use. The same location previously saw plans to build 240 houses and a little supermarket, but they were withdrawn in July last year, following concerns about a proposed Toucan roundabout. The site is 25 hectares of prominently agricultural land owned by the County Council and bordered on one side by the busy A47 and near the James Paget Hospital. A planning statement submitted with the new application says the development will deliver new homes for which there is a recognised local need and argues it can be built with no adverse impacts. Some locals disagree, however. And so far the plans are facing 21 objections from members of the public and Bradwell Parish Council, who have raised concerns over traffic levels and the impact of the houses on local services. Bradwell Parish Council said this is yet another overdevelopment. Although this is technically not Bradwell, its impact on the village is still significant. This is for general lack of infrastructure, medical and dental facilities, and a negative impact on the local communities. This is getting too much. This must stop before our communities are swamped with overdevelopment. One resident described the plans as absolutely ridiculous and said there isn't the infrastructure to cater for so many residents. Another said, "One of the strengths of this part of Galston is the sudden opening up of the countryside vista. The aesthetics of open fields on either side is life-affirming." Others raised concerns about the scale of the scheme. "The number of houses proposed is absurd," one wrote. "Builders are only looking at the profitability, not thinking about the people who live in them." The site sits by a busy roundabout at Beacon Park, close to the James Paget University Hospital. When an earlier version of the scheme was put forward in 2021, it faced strong opposition from both residents and a senior planning officer, with one of the main concerns being traffic chaos. National Highways recommended the Borough Council refuse planning permission for the scheme. They said that a proposed toucan crossing on Lynx Road appeared to be too close to the nearby A47 roundabout and could lead to vehicles queuing back to the junction. Additionally, in June this year, a retail impact assessment carried out on behalf of the Borough Council said that granting planning permission for the site could have a material impact on the chances of securing a grocery retail operator for a development at Beacon Park. Those concerns led to the County Council decision to withdraw its earlier application on July the 5th, 2024. A decision on the latest plans is expected by late January next year.
Two Norfolk charities awarded £26,000. More than £26,000 has been awarded to two Norfolk-based projects helping young people build brighter futures. Yarmouth-based Sunbeams Play and the Sproston Youth Engagement Project have received funding from EMR's Building Brighter Futures Fund, which is managed in partnership with the Cheshire Community Foundation and supported by the Norfolk Community Foundation. Sunbeams Play has received £17,080 to provide art therapy, life skills training and confidence building for autistic young people aged 12 to 25. Sessions will include cooking, budgeting, vocational experience, creative expression and community outings. Sproston Youth Engagement Project have been awarded £9,402 to offer free football coaching focused on sport, well-being and personal development for girls aged 12 and over. It will also run a holiday outreach programme for up to 130 young people at risk of isolation, antisocial behaviour or substance misuse. Ian Shepherd, Managing Director of EMR, said, "We are proud to support these outstanding projects across East Anglia through our Building Better Futures Fund, from tailored support for young people with autism to creative empowerment and sport-based mentoring. Each initiative is transforming lives. These charities are doing vital work, helping young people to grow in confidence, access opportunity and build stronger futures for themselves and their communities." Laura Wigby, Director of the Community Investment of Norfolk Community Foundation, said, "It's a privilege to work with EMR on such a purposeful initiative. The passion and commitment of these local charities are truly inspiring. Thanks to EMR's continued support, more young people in Norfolk will have the chance to thrive, build resilience and move towards a more confident and hopeful future." Launched in 2023, the fund has awarded more than 600,000 to charities across the UK.
Plans to build a four-storey apartment building with 14 flats on the edge of Great Yarmouth have been refused as it would be overbearing. An application was put forward by Mr. Don Dionisio for the development of land known as Four Archers Road in Runham. This was to involve the demolition of the existing warehouse on the site to be replaced with the building which would have overlooked the River Bure. The flats were to be spread across three floors above an undercroft parking area and include 2 1-bedrooms, 11 2-bedrooms and 1 3-bedroom. A total of 14 car parking spaces were also earmarked for the site, along with 20 cycle parking spaces in a secure facility on the ground floor. Planning approval for the site was initially granted in December 2021, but it lapsed without implementation. A planning statement for the application said that the development would provide 14 much-needed dwellings within the Great Yarmouth area. The statement added that the proposed scheme would contribute towards local and national government housing targets and improve the council's housing supply levels. The plans were refused by Great Yarmouth Borough Council, with its decision notice stating that the building would appear overbearing, visually intrusive, and result in harm to the street scene. The notice added that the proposal does not address the open spaces demands and is not considered to represent sustainable or an acceptable form of development. It is currently unclear at this stage whether or not the decision will be appealed by the applicant.
This discovery of a body in a Norfolk village has seen police spend several hours bagging evidence. Officers were called to a home in Station Road, North Belton, at about 11 a.m. on Tuesday after the body of a man in his 80s was discovered. A spokeswoman for the force has confirmed the death is not being treated as suspicious and that a file will be prepared for the coroner. Forensic investigators were seen going in and out of the property, bagging evidence throughout the afternoon.
An investigation is continuing into an assault in Great Yarmouth that left a man needing hospital treatment, police have said. Four teenagers were arrested on October the 25th on suspicion of assault after a man was attacked in an alleyway by Wolseley Road in Great Yarmouth. The victim was taken to the James Paget Hospital with serious injuries. The teenagers were taken to Great Yarmouth Police Station for questioning and have since been released on bail until January the 26th next year.
East Norfolk Sixth Form College, EN, has been recognised for its exceptional support for the armed forces community. EN has been presented with the Gold Award by the Ministry of Defence's Armed Forces Covenant Employer Recognition Scheme, ERS, the highest honour available through the scheme. The award acknowledges the college's commitment to flexible working arrangements, fostering a forces-friendly culture and engaging with the wider community. EN Principal Dr. Catherine Richards and Deputy Principal Dr. Simon Fox received the award at a celebration event aboard HMS Belfast. Dr. Richards said, "We are incredibly proud to receive the Gold Award, which recognises our commitment to those who serve or have served in the armed forces and their families. As a college, we believe in inclusion, opportunity and community, and this award reinforces our dedication." EN was the first UK sixth form college to establish a combined cadet force in 2018, which now has more than 100 members. Since September, the college has added a Royal Navy contingent and continues to act as the Poppier Field coordinator for the local area. That's good, isn't it, for young people?
It's good, very good. People living in Acle are being invited to have their say on its future. The village's residents can share their views on the community's updated neighbourhood plan, which outlines how the village will evolve up to 2040. The consultation runs from November the 22nd to January the 16th, giving villagers the opportunity to review the refreshed plan and give their feedback before it is finalised. A drop-in exhibition will take place on Saturday, November the 22nd, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Fletcher Community Rooms on Fletcher Way. Visitors can view displays, ask questions, and discuss the proposals with members of the Neighbourhood Plan team. The Acle Neighbourhood Plan, which guides decisions on future development, was first adopted in 2015 and has now been updated to reflect current community priorities and planning needs. It is supported by a new design, codes and guidance document, which will shape the quality and appearance of future developments. James Pitsey, chairman of the Achill Parish Council, said, "This plan is our community's voice in shaping the future of Achill. We want it to reflect what really matters to local people, from protecting our character and green spaces to ensuring that new development meets the needs of residents. Please take the time to read the plan and share your views. Your input will help us make Achill an even better place for everyone." After the consultation, the plan will be revised and submitted to Broadland District Council and the Broads Authority for independent examination before potentially going to a local referendum. Once adopted, it will become a formal part of the planning process for Achill. Copies of the draft can also be read at Achill Library or online at www.achillparishcouncil.gov.uk category N plan. I'll repeat that. www.achillparishcouncil.gov.uk/category/N/plan.
15 people were arrested for immigration offences during a day-long crackdown in Great Yarmouth. Operation Foxtail, an action day designed to disrupt organised and serious crime on Norfolk's roads, took place on November the 13th. Officers from the roads policing team, commercial vehicle unit, moonshot and local officers were joined by immigration enforcement and the HMRC. Out of a total of 16 arrests, 15 were made for immigration offences. Another person was arrested for having a counterfeit driving licence and no insurance. A total of 28 traffic offence reporters were issued, including 13 cases of drivers having no insurance, 9 drivers who had no licence, 5 people not wearing a seatbelt, and 2 using their phones when behind the wheel. 15 vehicles were seized as a result. One of the seized vehicles was a stolen car identified by the moonshot team, which has since been linked to a series of crimes in the Norwich area. Speaking about the operation, PC Josh Preston of the Roads and Armed Policing Team said, "The operation provides a visible deterrent to dangerous driving behaviours such as using your mobile phone or not wearing a seatbelt. It works to reassure the public that roads are being actively policed."
Madness there with their anthem to a bloke's first car. Reminds me of the 1955 Standard 10 Companion I paid £10 for in what must have been around 1965, with literally more rust than metal on the body and a jammed shut driver's door. Luckily, MOTs were still a thing of the future. Right, enough of the ancient reminiscences. Let's get you up to date with the rest of this week's local news.
Shop owners in Great Yarmouth have expressed shock after discovering that a former neighbour is standing trial accused of planning a terror attack. Walid Sadoui, 38, a Tunisian national, is alleged to have intended to cause untold harm and kill as many Jewish people as possible in a gun attack. He denies preparing acts of terrorism between December 2023 and May 2024. The married father of two bought the Albatross, an Italian restaurant on Regent Road, in 2018 with the help of a bank loan. It's alleged that he used the proceeds to fund a terror attack. The Albatross has been closed for more than 4 years. During that time, the building appears untouched. Its menu still hangs beside the door, advertising pizza margherita, lasagna al forno and spaghetti bolognese. On a cold, blusty Wednesday, Regent Road was largely deserted, with most shops closed for the winter season. Among the few businesses still opened, none of the proprietors could recall the former restaurant owner. One local business owner, who did not want to be named, said, "I don't know what to say. You know these things happen, but you don't expect them so close to home. Being in Yarmouth, you think these things happen in bigger cities." Another local shop owner said, "It's indicative of the times. The world is changing." Not everyone expressed surprise. One trader noted, "We had a spy incident a year ago, so nothing could surprise me in this town. We always say you don't know what goes on behind closed doors in Great Yarmouth." The Albatross sits only a 2-minute walk from the Hady Guest House on Prince's Road, which was linked to a Russian spy ring uncovered last year. Sadoui has been giving evidence at Preston Crown Court. He told jurors he moved to the UK in 2012 with his first wife, Jane, whom he met in Tunisia while working as a hotel entertainer, organising dance shows, quizzes and water aerobics. He said he had been very happy running the restaurant in Great Yarmouth.
Right. A man who admitted stealing from his elderly mother spent large amounts of it on Lego. Martin Walker stole a total of £28,000 from his mother, who lives in a care home, between January 16th, 2023 and July the 21st last year. The 55-year-old also spent cash on petrol for the car, as well as shopping and other household expenses. Walker, of Victoria Road, Great Yarmouth, was due to be sentenced at Norwich Crown Court on Tuesday, but the case was adjourned until January 26 next year. The defendant uses a wheelchair and will be sentenced at Norwich Magistrates Court, which has wheelchair access.
A Norfolk police officer pleaded not guilty to a string of shoplifting offences, claiming he was suffering from insanity at the time. David Howard is charged with 5 allegations of thefts from shops said to have occurred between March the 18th and the 30th this year. The 46-year-old is a former beat manager for Galston, Cobham and Southtown and has been a serving police officer for over 20 years, but he is currently suspended from duty. A spokesman for Norfolk Constabulary confirmed he had been suspended in April once the force became aware of the alleged offences. Appearing at Norwich Magistrates Court, he denied all five allegations of shop theft, all said to have occurred at the same branch of the Co-op in Great Yarmouth. Items it is claimed he stole include bottles of wine and champagne, cans of lager, biscuits, meat, toothpaste, oven chips, dog food, and Mr. Kipling's Bakewell tarts. James Landless, defending the officer, said he did not dispute taking the goods, totalling £62 without paying. He said it was claimed at the time he had mental health issues, and that his defence would be that he was suffering from a form of temporary insanity that meant he was not fully responsible for his actions. District Judge Matthew Bone had previously adjourned his case for the CPS to decide whether it was in the interests of justice for charges to proceed to trial. John Cooper, prosecuting, said the police had determined it was not suitable for a community disposal, but Howarth had instead been offered a conditional caution. However, the court heard he had rejected this out-of-court alternative to prosecution because it would result in a criminal record that could affect his future job prospects. Howarth, of Beattie Road in Great Yarmouth, will stand trial at Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court on August the 3rd next year. The trial is expected to hear from a defence medical specialist as to the officer's state of mind, while the prosecutor may also seek its own expert.
Trust students take part in NCFC matches. Young footballers have taken part in a day of competition, teamwork and professional inspiration out on the pitch. Year 7 students from 6 Ormiston Academies Trust schools in the east of England competed in 2 tournaments held by the Norwich City Football Club Scholars, NCFC. The schools involved were Fleg High, Ormiston Academy, Broadland High Ormiston Academy, Ormiston Venture Academy, Ormiston Victory Academy, Ormiston Sudbury Academy, and City of Norwich School. Joe Robson, Regional Enrichment and Social Action Coordinator for the East of Ormiston Academies Trust, said, "These tournaments are a wonderful example of what can be achieved through collaboration between education and professional sport. Our students gain not only valuable playing experience, but also inspiration from role models within Norwich Football Club. We are incredibly proud of everyone who took part and grateful to NCFC for their ongoing support in providing such enriching opportunities for our academies in the East." The girls' tournament was held at the University of East Anglia's Sports Park and was organised by NCFC scholars as part of their BTEC, an apprenticeship programme. The boys' tournament, originally planned for another location, was moved due to Storm Benjamin and held at Norwich City's Coney Training Ground. Ormiston Victory Academy won the tournament, with City of Norwich School as runners-up. NCFC donated signed shirts to winners, runners-up and standout players. I bet they had fun doing that.
A man is fighting a council's refusal of his bid to convert a former telephone exchange into housing. Fred Muscat was seeking permission to extend and convert Martham Telephone Exchange on Reps Road into a one-bedroom home. But planners at Great Yarmouth Borough Council refused the plans, stating that the proposed house would be much larger than the existing building. Other reasons for rejecting his application were the potential overdevelopment of the plot and the cramped form of the house. Mr. Muscat has now appealed the decision to the Planning Inspectorate. In his appeal statement, he said that planners used the wrong policies when considering his application. He added that it would be a much-needed small development for a self-build purchaser wishing to get a foothold on the housing ladder. The application was proposing side and rear extensions as well as a new roof. There was one objection to the plans, raising concerns about overdevelopment of the site. In 2017, a previous application to change the use to residential was refused and later dismissed at appeal.
Marathon for Galston Hospice. A specialist occupational therapy is set to tackle the 2026 London Marathon. Cara Riseborough, who works for St Elizabeth Hospice in Great Yarmouth and Waveney, is running to raise funds for a new community hospice in Galston. The marathon will take place on April 26 and will see Cara join thousands of other runners pounding the streets of the capital. Cara, who lives in Acle, said, "With the hospice announcing it will be building a community hospice in Galston, I thought, why not run a marathon to support our services and these exciting new plans? Training for the London Marathon is the hardest thing I've done, but knowing my fundraising will support people in our care keeps me going. Every penny donated towards the London Marathon Challenge will make such a difference, helping us achieve our goal of building a new hospice and supporting more people in the Great Yarmouth and Waveney. St Elizabeth Hospice has provided care for more than 6,000 patients and to their families in Great Yarmouth and Waveney since April 2019 through a healthcare partnership with East Coast Community Healthcare. Great Yarmouth Borough Council approved planning permission in September for the development of the new community hospice in Galston. The facility will be on a 7-acre site previously secured by East Coast Hospice, with whom the charity merged in 2023. James Fox Golding, Events and Challenges Manager at the hospice, said, "Best of luck to Cara with her London Marathon Challenge in aid of our services and the new community hospice in Galston. All funds raised will go towards helping more people in Great Yarmouth and Waveney receive vital care when they need it most. For more information about the St Elizabeth Hospice, call 01473 723 600, that's 01473 723 600, or you can visit the website on stelizabethhospice.org.uk, and that's all in lowercase. That's stelizabethhospice.org.uk.
Two pubs have been recently recognised for exceptional standards of cleanliness. J.D. Weatherspoon Venues, the William Adams in High Street Galston, and the Troll Cart in Regent Road, Great Yarmouth, have both received honours in the Loo of the Year Awards 2025, which celebrate the best away-from-home toilet facilities across the UK.
Okay, then, Margaret.
The William Adams was awarded a Platinum Plus grading by inspectors, while the Troll Cart earned a Platinum rating. Chris Brett, manager of the William Adams, said, "We are delighted with the grading. Staff at the pub ensure the toilets are in excellent condition at all times, and it is great that this has been recognised by the inspectors. The awards involve unannounced inspections of toilets across the country, which are judged on criteria such as decor, cleanliness, accessibility, equipment and overall management." Becky Wall, Managing Director of the Loo of the Year Awards, said, "The toilets at the two pubs have been designed and fitted out to a very high standard and are both clean and well maintained. The pubs deserve their awards."
Well, there we are. A former Canaries manager and West Ham player will be turning on the Christmas lights at a Blowfield pub this winter. Ken Brown, who managed Norwich City Football Club from 1980 to 1987 and even led the team to win the Milk Cup in 1985, will switch on the enchanted garden lights at the King's Head in Blowfield. On November the 29th, from 4:30 p.m, punters will be able to join the 91-year-old for an evening filled with festive carols and free mince pies as the pub rings in the Christmas season. The Enchanted Garden leads to Santa's Grotto, where for £6.50, children can meet the Father Christmas and take home a gift throughout December. The Christmas event will raise money for Football Against Dementia and Dementia UK, with £5 for every ticket sold going to the charities. As well as managing Norfolk City Football Club, Brown played for West Ham, making more than 400 appearances in the Football League and being capped once for England.
A family-run butcher's is entering liquidation after trading for 7 decades. Fleetwood's Butchers in Goulston High Street closed due to unforeseen economic circumstances last month. It had been serving the town since the 1950s. Owner Mark Allen said it had been a very emotional decision for him and his family. Fleetwood's Butchers Limited is now meeting with creditors. In a Facebook post announcing the closure, Mr. Allen wrote, "It's with a very heavy heart, but Fleetwood's will cease to trade after October the 1st, 2025, due to unforeseen economic circumstance. As a family-run business, it has been a very emotional and hard time for us to make this decision. We've loved being there through hard times, COVID, through different changes, but most of all, the good times we've spent getting to know all our customers. Myself and my family would like to say a massive thank you. We valued your continued support, especially over the last few years. A virtual meeting of the creditors of Fleetwood's Butchers will be held next Wednesday, November the 26th at 11 a.m.
An investigation has been opened into the death of one of Norfolk's best-known DJs and fashion retailers. Richard Routledge of Constable Drive, Bradwell, was best known as the host of the legendary Richard's parties, entertaining thousands of people in the Great Yarmouth area. He was equally admired for his work in men's fashion, both in the high street and in his own retail ventures, having worked in the industry for more than 40 years. He also worked as a postman for around 20 years. Norfolk Coroner's Court recently opened an inquest into the death of the 69-year-old, who died at the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital on July the 19th. The brief hearing confirmed Mr. Routledge's provisional primary cause of death as the congestive cardiac failure and an infection of unknown source. Senior Coroner Samantha Goward also confirmed Mr. Routledge was born on February the 29th, 1956, at Kelso, Scotland. Further evidence expected to be heard when the full inquest is held in April 2026.
Well, that's it for the news this week. So welcome to Grapevine Extra. And we start with Margaret with some fishy memories, followed closely by Julie bemoaning the expectations of today's children.
I'd like to talk to you today about memories of the fishing season, which was always in autumn, wasn't it? And I'm sure many of you, thinking back to your childhoods, will remember and recognise quite a bit of what I'm saying here. So when we talk about the fishing in Great Yarmouth, And this area, what we usually mean, of course, is the herring fishing. That once great industry, which had such an impact on the life and economy of the towns and villages, and most of all, on the families. It was not just the men. In one way or another, it seems that it involved everybody. And in the village where my own family originated, there were long periods when the women ran everything, while their menfolk were away at the fishing. And it seems that, in many ways, those women involved were ahead of their time, although that would never have occurred to them. But it was just the way things were. But it would be difficult for any young people learning about this, and also for many of us, like myself, who are much older, to understand the strong, almost mystical pull that the fishing held over the men at that time, during the earlier years of the 20th century. They knew all too well what a hard life it was. But it was a mixture of challenge, excitement, dread, and relief. Who knows? But it was certainly very real, and foremost was the need to keep a roof over the family's heads and food on the table in those difficult days. When they went off to the fishing, there would be young boys, often only 13 or 14 years old, going to sea for the first time, all excited, with their fathers, uncles, older brothers, and warned to expect no favours, destined to be at everybody's back and call, and to spend hours down in the dark in the rope room, coiling the ropes as the nets were hauled in, to the elderly and experienced men who might even be wondering if this fishing season would be their last. But, as I said, the hold was very real. And even at the end of World War I, in about 1919, my grandfather was in Dover with his family. He was a skipper, and his boat had been requisitioned for war work. He was offered a good position skippering on the cross-channel ferries. It would have been secure and well paid, but no, he didn't want to plough the same 20 miles of sea every day, and he couldn't wait to get back to the fishing. And he was only one of many. Now, I have to admit that my own memories of the herring fishing are sparse and fragmented, and much of what I know, if not all, came from older members of the family and from friends. This is because when I was growing up, in the years after World War II, the industry was going into serious decline. I suppose this was partly due to all the social upheavals which had happened, the changing times, and the massive overfishing which had taken place during the boom years. But in the heyday of the fishing, I've been told that the River Yare would be so crowded with the drifters that it was possible to cross from one side of the river to the other without getting your feet wet. I never saw this, so far as I can remember, and certainly never experienced it, but I know that there were many who did. And the fishermen would follow the shoals of herring round the British Isles, sometimes out as far as County Mayo on the far west coast of Ireland. It was not unusual for a young man to bring home a bride from what seemed to be a faraway coastal town. One of my family married a girl from Penzance, who settled down very happily in Norfolk. But to get back to the local situation, what they called the home fishing took place in the autumn, which is why I'm talking about this now, which was when so many of the Scotsmen brought their boats down here. I've been told that it was often quite a race to get into the harbour with the night's catch, to get the herring sold, and that there was a lot of desperate and often really fierce rivalry to get the best positions on the quayside. Meanwhile, the Scots girls came down following their menfolk to gut the fish, and what a skilled bunch they were, working at incredible speed and with terribly sore hands from the salty brine. But somehow they also produced knitting in their precious spare time, and they sang their traditional songs in their lovely carrying voices, Regent Road, Yarmouth could be a very musical place at that time. But however hard they worked, no Scotsman would ever put out to sea on a Sunday. Oh, no. On the Lord's Day, they put on their best caps, ganzies and mufflers, and attended chapel faithfully, no doubt fortifying themselves with a wee dram or two later on, and honestly, who could blame them? So in the autumn, it would all be happening, with the home fishing. As dusk fell and the smell of fish hung over the town, a great full moon, the fishing moon, would rise over the sea, a wonderful sight from Galston Cliffs. And although rough weather was a constant danger to the men and the boats, I've been told that there were sometimes rare quiet nights when the moon was full. The nets had been cast, the boats were still, and for a while peace reigned. And from when your boat was laying, you could hear the voices of the other men and the other boats. Maybe somebody would strike a tune with an accordion and a song, and they would all join in. And though the word mystical would probably never have occurred to the men, yet they remembered, and it had a real hold on them. There was a lovely little hymn that we learnt in school, and which we would sing during assemblies in the fishing season, and the words went something like this. When lamps are lighted in the town, the boats sail out to sea. The fishers watch when night comes down. They work for you and me. At night time, when I go to rest, before I sleep, I pray that God will bless the fishermen and bring them back at day. God has watched over the fishermen upon the deep, dark sea and brought them safely home again, where they are glad to be. Does that hymn ring any bells with any of you? It was very moving, even to a child, to be in bed, maybe listening to the foghorn sounding, to help keep our menfolk safe, whether they were fishing, on the lightships, or crossing the North Sea to the other side, as they called it, to do some trading. But in truth, it was all hard work. Many of the local landladies would accommodate the Scottish girls, and much of the house had to be changed and cleared, and all the mats and rugs had to be taken up due to the sturdy rubber boots and aprons and fish scales. I'm wondering if you remember Alan Smethurst, the singing postman. People in the 60s and 70s, in one of his songs he said, "A fisherman's life is a rare old job. Winter winds blow and the women they mob." And I think that that just about sums it up. But then there were good times too. And on the lighter side came the day when the profits would be shared out in payment for all the hard work. This was known as making up. And it set a signal for great celebrations and merrymaking in the pubs. One of my relations, normally a most quiet and sober of men, made a merry night of it in the fisherman's return at Winterton and had to be taken home, no doubt with much ribaldry and hilarity, drunk in a wheelbarrow. Early the next morning, still quite intoxicated, he kissed the milkman who had come in to help instead of his wife. I doubt if he ever lived it down. But in all the modern inventions, the men still faced danger. And so the quote comes to mind as this. "Some went down to the sea in ships to trade on the deep waters. These men see your face, O God, and the marvels you work in the deep. And after all these years, my thoughts still go with them. And so please, after I've left, and anything you think is important or maybe mistakes I've made, do call in and correct me. And meanwhile, thank you for listening, and stay happy, stay safe. God bless you."
Old Tom and Long had an old crab boat, old as the hill, but she still do float. Kept the town on, get yourself a noon. Boy, he said the price would be his ruin. He went away on a Monday morn, didn't tell a soul where he would have gone. Next time I see him half a mile offshore, the boat wasn't there, oh my lord, and the bottom docked out. There was old Thomas hanging on a buoy, nobody about, so I hollers ahoy. Didn't seem to me like he had my shout, I reckon we shall have to get the lifeboat out. Well, the lifeboat sailed and the crab boats too, all off together like the convoy do. Down tight shot, tail totty jack shore, chap like Bob and a real lot more. Now old Tommy Long was hanging on still, he was laughing at him fit to kill. And as they all drove slowly nigh, then all together they all do cry, had a bottom dropped out. What's all the laughing at, they do shout, since we had to get all the crab boots out. He say, ain't you nothing else to do, boy, we say we can't help you. We weren't told where you were gone, when you went away on the Monday morn. The boat you had, we never could see, we come along here, and here you be, here the bottom dropped out. Hold you hard, old Tom along said, you all talking out the back of your head. The old crab boat, she never was there, I sent her away for a little repair. All I'm a-doing on here this day, just a little swim to pass time away. And while I'm here just having this dip, you come along with all this squid, here the bottom docked out. Well, a fisherman's life is a real old job, winter winds blow and the women they mob, but still they laugh when they recall the day when old Tom fooled us all. Down in the Windham Saturday night, you can see Tom with his clay pipe, and if they don't quite fill his glass, he'll turn around and he'll say blast, here the bottom dropped out.
Hello again. Just where has this year gone? I mean, it's the 21st of November already. Oh, my word. Anyway, since I spoke with you last, we have had Halloween. Initially an American custom, which has taken off big time here now, with pre-made costumes, etc., adorning our shelves, and what is called trick and treating. The idea is that children of all ages, the young ones normally accompanied by an adult, dress up in crazy costumes like witches, skeletons, or even pumpkins, and they go around the neighbourhood locking on doors saying, trick or treat, waving a bucket in front of whoever ventures to open it. Those who are sensible go for the treat option, having already organised a mountain of sweets or fruit to add to their stash. That's all quite harmless, but I wouldn't want to risk the treat trick option. Heaven only knows what they'd come up with, especially the older ones. I don't want to be a killjoy, but the whole experience can be very intimidating, particularly for the elderly. I admit that sometimes I have put out all the visible lights at the front of the house in order that it appears I'm not at home. Well, that's miserable of me, isn't it? But never mind.
No, I do it as well,
do you? Mm. So even when all the kiddie Halloween costumes, complete with the wands and the pointy hats, were in every high street shop, also were Christmas decorations, presents, and those famous garish Christmas jumpers. Isn't it a shame, though? The excitement we had as children awaiting that special day has long gone for today's kiddies. You can't fail to have heard on the advertisements of TV promoting all these horrendously expensive toys geared at children's interest and greed as they declare, "I want one." I'm afraid if I would ever have dared to say the phrase, "I want," as opposed to, "Please may I have," whatever it was I said I wanted would be the last thing I'd receive. But times were different now. In the 1950s, a child in a low-income family, I was thrilled to have things my parents had painstakingly made, probably taking months. Indeed, on my study windowsill, I have a set of saucepans and an old-fashioned kettle, none taller than 2 inches, which my father made of metal when I was about 5, complete with the cooking stove. Sadly, that's long gone. But the whole thing was my pride and joy for years. I'd pretend to cook up torn-up leaves for cabbage, water in the kettle for tea, acorns for potatoes, etc., serving them all up to Eddie my Teddy on nasturtium leaves, because they're particularly round and flat. The blooms are sort of trumpet-shaped, so they made wonderful cups propped up on the smaller, younger nasturtium leaves, which made wonderful sauces. Mud also featured, of course, carefully made to the correct consistency before lobbing it into the frying pan, sadly metamorphing into a fried egg, omelette or bacon. I used sticks for knives and forks. Oh, it was so much fun. That, climbing trees, playing on a homemade go-kart or sledge, and riding my second-hand bike, which Daddy had bought from Acklesale and painted up, was this little girl's idea of bliss. Being an only child living in the country, so no playmates, I am convinced these games broadened my imagination and ingenuity. Dust says I have a bonkers brain, but in a crisis, if you need something which is not readily available, I try to scheme making it from the resources available. It may not be like a shop-bought item, but it would work somehow. A prime example is one that Dust quotes often. I had a gazebo, which is a canvas shelter on legs with no sides. 2 legs I could put tent pegs in to hold them upright. The other 2 were over a concrete patio, and my bonkers brain found an old pair of wellies, put the legs inside, then filled them with stones and water. Really good anchors, and it worked. Sadly, today's kiddies wouldn't think outside the box like that, because they've never had to. It's not their fault. I feel so sorry for them, having everything they could possibly need and more, without appreciating what financial sacrifices their parents have made to provide those things, sometimes putting themselves into deep debt. I'm sure every generation thinks that theirs are the best, but any of you out there who, like me, were born a few years after World War II, we indeed have been so lucky, brought up in a country where folk were so glad to be alive, reunited with their loved ones, forming united communities, rebuilding, make and do and mending, striving to put the great back into Great Britain. I'm one woman who is very proud of all those who gave us what we have today through their sheer hard work, and a time when families talked, walked, and grew together. As tech engulfs us at a scary rate, let us, who can, try to encourage the youth of today to appreciate the simple and natural things in this wonderful environment in which we live.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dog say goodnight, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They learn much more than I never knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
That's about the height of it for this week. Grapevine is copyright 2025 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accepts responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Next week's newsreaders will be Andy and the other Margaret. So, we hope that we can look forward to welcoming you then for much more of your local news. But in the meantime, we wish you a good week and hope that you stay safe and well. So from everyone here at Grapevine, as usual, it's bye for now.